Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
Woohoo! Are you ready?
Yes!
I said, are you ready?
Jason Dale!
Daddy's too hot.
I like peni.
That's what she said.
Hump.
I love BJ's fur circus. Steven Ricker's testicles.
T-butted. No touchy place.
Beer.
Broken penis.
Vitellary Filippula.
Filippuli. Filippalapala.
Use your big boy words.
La 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 la.
Who's the brains in this outfit? My point exactly.
That was totally wicked!
Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And now, Iceman Insights Season 3. Starring Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com. How are you doing, Michael Shockley? Are you ready for some hockey?
I am ready. Hockey season is upon us.
Officially.
It's cool outside. Gas is under $3 a gallon.
Yep.
It's all good.
Ryan Huff's already finished off 20 teams in the NHL who will not ever make the playoffs ever again. So, yeah, we're down to Ryan Huff's got it narrowed down to the final six teams.
He knows it.
Yeah. One weekend.
Take your money to Vegas.
Yeah. Anyways, wow, what a change in the ECHL. And
yeah.
You had a great Facebook status update yesterday when you talked about our 104 days in the Western Conference. That is the only disappointing news, but go ahead and talk about the ECHL-CHL merger.
Yeah, fare thee well, CHL. Last week, the rumor finally became reality on Tuesday the 7th, exactly 10 whole days before the start of the ECHL regular season. The ECHL announced that it had officially added the remaining 7 CHL teams to the ECHL. And it's not one of those things where we're waiting until next year to do it. It is immediate. The upcoming 2014-15 season will now feature the existing 21 ECHL teams and the 7 CHL transfers under one umbrella. And the league now has 28 teams in 20 states and one Canadian province. The 7 teams coming over from the CHL are the Allen Americans.
Champions.
The Brampton Beast.
Love it, Brampton.
The Missouri Mavericks.
I believe, is that where Jake Obermeyer's playing?
No.
Okay.
There are like 4 former Icemen on the Mavericks,
okay.
So Mike Clemente among them. The Quad City Mallards.
Quack, quack.
The Rapid City Rush.
Is that where Jake Obermeyer's playing?
Nope.
Okay.
That's where Tatro is playing.
Ah, yes, okay.
The Tulsa Oilers.
Is that where Jake Obermeyer's playing?
Yes.
There we go. I knew it was one of those teams.
And the Wichita Thunder, which means the ECHL now has 2 teams named the Thunder, both in the Western Conference.
Cool.
Stockton and Wichita.
There you go.
And for those who don't know, that's not necessarily uncommon. Well, it's not common, but it's not unprecedented. In the AHL, there are 2 teams called the Admirals.
Yes, indeed. Milwaukee
and Norfolk. Yep. Right. Because, again, that was a case of leagues coming together. The Norfolk Admirals played in the AHL, and the Milwaukee Admirals played in the IHL. And when the AHL absorbed the remnants of the IHL, they let the Admirals keep the name, and there's been 2 Admirals teams ever since. So we'll have the same situation with the Thunder here in the ECHL. The 7 CHL teams are officially ECHL expansion teams. This is not a merger, no matter what some people may call it. The ECHL retains all existing ECHL rules, regulations, salary cap, veteran rules, all that stuff is the ECHL going forward. The CHL teams will completely become ECHL teams in every way, shape, and form. And they are officially expansion teams. They even had to basically re-sign everyone they had already signed. The the players that they had signed to CHL contracts, those contracts were considered null and void, and they had to re-sign everyone to new ECHL contracts. And so far, it seems like, for the most part, they've done that. Most of the players that they had under contract are staying under contract, but there was some cutting because they allowed six veterans, and the ECHL only allows four, so teams that had more than four veterans under contract had to make some decisions quickly.
I talked to Jake Obermeyer a few weeks ago before.
Wait, who does he play for?
Yeah, I don't remember. One of those teams. But I was talking to him about, you know, what are the differences? What are you hearing? And he was one of the guys that wasn't hearing a lot. He was just told that camp was being all of a sudden moved up or moved back. But training camp got moved around and no one else was saying anything. And I asked him, well, is there that big of a difference? And he said, the only big difference is in the CHL, the top guys got the top dollar and the low guys got the low dollar. You'd have a bunch of guys making $350 so that you could have a bunch of veterans making $1,000 or $1,200 so you stayed under the cap, but it isn't. It's a little bit more balanced in the ECHL. Mm-hmm. And he said there's little things that are different, you know, $5 more per diem and everything else. So I know he's happy to get it done, and it'll be awesome to see all these guys either coming to back to Evansville to play with us or against us.
Very true. For newer fans who weren't around in our CHL days, probably of the seven that are transferring, the biggest rival we had was Quad City. We played them a lot, and with that came a lot of bad blood. But we had a decent amount of heat with Rapid City, Wichita, and Missouri, too. Missouri especially because that's the team we played the one time we made the playoffs in the last four seasons, and they swept us in the first round. So and that series got somewhat chippy, so there was some bad blood there. But I don't know that there's a whole lot of players that were with Missouri then that are there now, and same thing here.
Yep.
But it'd be cool to rekindle rivalries and perhaps build new rivalries with some of those teams that we never saw a whole lot. We never really played Allen or Tulsa that much. So and Brampton's a new team. Speaking of Brampton, they are the ECHL's first Canadian team since the Victoria Salmon Kings in British Columbia. They folded in 2011, but because Brampton is in the league now, that means the Canadian flag is required to be displayed in every ECHL building.
Oh, interesting. Well, and I'm interested to see, too, how passports work, because no one didn't have to have passports, and now if you're going to play Brampton, you got to get a passport.
Right, and that's no easy feat.
Nope.
That takes time, it takes money, and digging up all kinds of documents to prove who you are and whatnot. So, yeah, that's a big thing, logistically speaking.
And they're working over there, too, so is this that whole T9 or... You've got to have a
work visas,
yep,
and tax things and all that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. It's
things got real difficult.
Yeah.
It might be why Joe Ernst from the vice president of operations over at the ECHL never called me back.
He's been a little busy.
He might've been.
Yeah. Worth noting, the same group of owners own Allen, Tulsa, and Wichita. There was no mention of that by the ECHL brass in the press release about the absorption. So I guess they're okay with it. I'll be interested to see if that becomes an issue at some point in the future. It seems like they just did whatever it took to make this happen now. But I wonder if at some point the ECHL is going to say, you know what, it's probably not a good idea to have the same people owning three teams in the same league.
Yeah, but then again, you got a salary cap, so how much can you really do?
Right. As long as there's no clear sign of tampering, you know, to where they're favoring one team or you know,
making trades because Evansville's coming into town for a three-game series and then trading back after he goes out or something. That would be strategic.
Yeah, strategery.
Strategery.
There are some dormant teams between the two leagues. The Arizona Sundogs from the CHL they're taking this year off due to financial issues, and the Las Vegas Wranglers, as we know, do not have a home rink in Las Vegas right now. Both of them want to return next season in the ECHL, and if they did and all 28 existing teams come back, that would give us 30 teams to directly tie in with the AHL and the NHL also having 30 teams.
Yeah, that doesn't mean everyone's going to get an affiliation.
Exactly. Yeah, unless the ECHL requires its teams to have an affiliation, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. And you never know what's going to happen from a year to year either.
Right, and if the Sundogs are having financial issues right now, what are they going to do when they got to pony up $1 million for the ECHL franchise fee?
I wonder, though, how that worked. I wonder if these CHL teams were required to pay the full amount or if there was some sort of a deal that was struck.
Yeah, I don't know why they would strike a deal. It's not like it was a competitive thing or anything.
No,
so.
And the CHL teams needed the ECHL a lot more than the ECHL needed the CHL teams.
Yep.
But who knows? None of us are privy to that information.
Not yet.
Unless you get a hold of Joe Ernst. So after all of this, realignment came a boot because that's a whole lot of teams and you got to rejigger things.
And, I like rejigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it worked out perfect.
Yeah, it did. Four divisions, seven teams each. The top four from each division will make the playoffs. The first two rounds will still be within the division, and all rounds will be best of seven. In the Eastern Conference North Division, we've got our Evansville Icemen back in the Eastern Conference. Cincinnati, Fort Wayne, Indy, Kalamazoo, Toledo, and Wheeling. The other division in the Eastern Conference is the... I have it the East Division here. I want to say they called it the South Division, but maybe it is the East Division. Because it would be kind of silly to have Elmira in the South Division. Elmira, Florida, Greenville, Gwinnett, Orlando, Reading, and South Carolina. It's essentially the old South Division plus Elmira and Reading. And then in the Western Conference, the Pacific Division is what last year's Western Conference was. The seven teams that are left, Alaska, Bakersfield, Colorado, Idaho, Ontario, Stockton, and Utah. And the Central Division is the seven CHL teams and...
Should have just called it the Central Hockey League Division.
Yeah, exactly. the Turner Division. Brampton being the major outlier there. And, of course, we need to keep in mind this is for this year only. The realignment is. The ECHL has already said that a more geographically logical realignment will happen next summer because they want to get Brampton with teams that are actually, you know, not 1,000 miles away. So somehow, some way, they will be in a division with the Elmira, Reading, Wheeling contingent next season in all likelihood. It's just a matter of which teams come back, which teams may come out of dormancy, and how do they all fit together.
And it doesn't really matter anyways because you can play a flexible schedule.
Right.
So whether they're
it's just for standings.
Yeah. Elmira and Reading are going to spend just as much time in Wheeling as they always have, even though they're divisional opponents, and they're going to play more games against Wheeling than they are against Florida and Orlando.
Right.
But it works out, seven teams in each division, as long as none of them folds through the season, and best four make it to the playoffs, and I love that it's the old school format with you got to win your division, so all the playoff games, first two rounds of the playoffs is to have a division champion and then divisions versus divisions and then conference versus conference.
Right.
I'm excited about it. It's going to be awesome, except for being out of the Western Conference. I thought it was going to be really cool to play Colorado and try to work our way into the Cup Final through Alaska and Stockton. That was going to be awesome, but it's all for naught.
Yep. So, yeah, our tenure in the Western Conference lasted 107 calendar days with a grand total of 0 games played.
Probably our best record ever, though.
Yeah, we're undefeated.
Yeah.
Undefeated.
We're 500.
No, well, yeah, that's true. We're 500, but we're undefeated. We never lost in the Western Conference. And, it's fond memories.
Yes.
That there was that time that...
I called Kevin McGlue from the Colorado Eagles and talked to him about... us being in the Western Conference.
That was the most in-depth we had.
Yep, that was the closest we ever got.
We can say that we're the only people who did an Iceman radio broadcast of any kind while we were members of the Western Conference.
That is true. I was still a member of the Iceman back then.
That's true, yeah. We were trailblazing, and now the trail has filled back in.
Yes.
Because of the realignment of new teams, these schedules were changed to some extent. CHL teams had to add 6 more games to their existing 66-game schedules to get in line with the ECHL's 72-game schedule. There was minimal disruption for the existing ECHL teams. Home dates almost entirely intact for pretty much all the teams, and just minor changes to home opponents and road trips here and there. There were a few changes to the Iceman's schedule, but nothing major. The New Year's Eve home game is now against Quad City instead of Toledo. Same time, same date, just different opponent. The Walleye now will not visit this season. That was going to be their only visit to the Ford Center all
year.
They
deserve a break.
They came here a lot last year.
Yeah, and through snow and ice and everything else. So
they're probably thinking, good riddance. Yeah. We don't want to go to Evansville.
I bet you they're saying it out loud.
Yeah. But hey, it's fun for us. We get to see the Mallards and get to boo them and make all the duck jokes and stuff like that. So that's cool. On the road, our January 9th, 10th, and 11th road trip to Elmira, Reading, and Reading is now a trip to CHL foes, Missouri, Wichita, and Wichita, same dates. And then one other schedule change that is actually unrelated to the CHL deal. The Friday, January 23rd game at Cincinnati has been moved to Monday, December 29th. And that's not about the CHL. It was because of CHER. Cher wants to have a concert at the U.S. Bank Arena in Cincinnati on January 23rd, and the Cyclones accommodated her.
Well, you got to. You got to move aside for Cher.
Right. So there you have it. That's these changes to the Iceman schedule. Updated printer-friendly Iceman schedules are available on IcemanManiacs.com now. So if you want to print a new one off and stick it on your fridge, go to the info and features page on IcemanManiacs.com, and you can print off your little handy-dandy Iceman schedule calendar.
Training camp winding down, which obviously means transactions galore. Not only the ECHL training camp, but the AHL training camp as well. So players getting sent down to respective teams and allowing respective teams to cut some of their contracted players or players on tryouts. And here we go.
Yeah, it's only been 3 weeks since our last show, but there have been a lot of roster changes. At one point in a 72-hour span, there were 18 different players involved in Iceman transactions. That's a lot, considering the fact that during the season you only have 23 on your roster. We only have an hour, though, actually less than that at this point, so we'll just hit the highlights. First off, under NHL contract and assigned to us by Ottawa, there are three players, including two we mentioned as possibilities on our last show. Those two are forward Jacob Sulek.
Start buying his jersey now. This kid is fantastic. I was jumping around in the family room when I saw the transaction come across the wire.
And I believe you sent me a message on Facebook that just said, Sulek!
In all caps.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Yeah. You were slightly excited.
I am.
And I even asked you if this was the new man crush to replace Maddie Spaeth.
Zebra love. You always got to have the zebra love.
Sulek had 30 points in 49 games with Elmira last year under Coach Mullins.
Man crush coming into town to do a game.
Really?
In the first couple of weeks. Yep.
Really? Cool. This weekend or no?
Nope. I don't think so.
Gotcha.
Maybe 3 weeks out.
Cool. The other player coming down from Ottawa that we figured was coming down is defenseman Troy Rutkowski. Had 9 points in 41 games with Elmira last year.
Not a puck mover. He's a big body, big solid defenseman. Really like him.
Good two-way guy.
No,
well, one way.
Not a puck mover.
More the one
big,
way.
Big, solid defenseman.
Just your classic stay-at-home D guy that every team needs.
Yep. And you pair him up with someone that can move the puck, and you got a good tandem.
Cool. And the third player sent to us from Ottawa is a player I mentioned on the Maniac message board, but we didn't talk about him here because we thought we were going to get someone else. Goaltender Chris Dreiger, a 20-year-old rookie who was expected to start the year in Binghamton with the B-Sens, but they have decided to keep Scott Greenham, who is on under AHL contract, instead. I guess they just want to get Dreiger some work, let him get his feet wet at a little lower level with a little less pressure, and the ECHL is the place to do it. He was a 2012 third-round pick of the Sens. He is still under NHL contract to them. Went 88, 40, and 14 in 3 seasons in the Western Hockey League of Junior A, with the Calgary Hitmen. The last 2 years there, he had save percentages of .915 and .918, which is pretty darn good. And he played 25 playoff games, so that's good experience for him. And he took a stick to the eye in Sunday's preseason finale up in Indy. No word yet on whether he'll miss any time. But
how does that even happen?
Apparently, it was just one of those freak deals where it managed to get through the face mask in just the right way. I don't know. I didn't see
because
it.
Because years ago, they called them the cat eyes, which was those hockey goaler masks that had the angled eye slots, and sticks were getting in there. Mm-hmm. So they outlawed those. So I didn't think it was even possible to get a stick in there anymore.
I guess if you've got a small enough hole and stick it in right.
Rejigger it. Okay. Yeah, there we go. We're just over here. We're in the studio here at 111 North 4th Street amusing ourselves.
Well, anyways, at least that's two people that are being amused by this.
It's only two listening.
Some players under AHL contract and assigned to us by Binghamton. Three players, including two we mentioned last time on our last show 3 weeks ago. Those players were forward Danny Hobbs, who had 35 points in 52 games with Elmira last year. Thoughts on him?
Do you remember seeing him? Yeah, oh yeah, real solid player. This is your two-way guy. This is I don't expect him to come on the top line and score 80 points, but he'll be that second line, third line player wherever you need him, center, winger. Just goes up and down the ice. Solid player. Not a huge body. Not going to throw a lot of body weight around, but he'll play physical. He's just a do-it-all kind of guy.
We'll look at the bigger picture more in a little bit, but I think the thing that strikes me about the roster as it is right now is there may not be a single point-per-game player on this team. But
Matt Lowry.
There's a lot of guys that are that 40 to 60-point range, maybe even higher than that.
Well, Jacob Sulik will be point-per-game.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
He was well under that in Elmira last year. You think that was just because he was...
in Elmira?
Yeah. 30 points in 49 games.
Yeah. Name someone else that played in Elmira. That was really good. Anybody?
Not really, no.
Yeah, exactly.
Danny Hobbs?
So, yeah.
Yeah, and he's exactly. Here now?
And Bellamy. That's about as good as it got there.
Yeah.
So you put him...
wasn't much.
You put him on a top line with Lowry and Andre Bouvet-Morissette, he's going to score point per game, and those guys will be rocking too. So I expect Mo to get 30 goals this year.
Really?
Yep.
Nice. I hope you're right. The other player sent down that we thought was probably going to get sent down is forward Brandon Wong. And if that name sounds familiar, it should, because he played last year with, or 2 years ago, with the Greenville Road Warriors. 161 points in 185 career ECHL games played. That's a guy that could be a near point per game player, too. And that's a really nice send down. I'm not 100% sure he'll stick here all that long, because if he plays well, he may earn himself a promotion. But that's another nice piece to have sent down from affiliates.
Yeah, I don't know anything about him. So, other than Kevin Ziegler, Kevinsville, I think is reprinting it to Wongsville, 102, section 102. So he seems to be a huge fan. I'll try to get him on the show.
So so if he grew out a certain style of facial hair, would it be called a Wong Fu?
I like it. Why not?
I got nothing else.
Rejigger.
The third player sent down from Binghamton was defenseman Ty Wishart, and we didn't talk about him last show because they didn't even have him under contract last show. He was signed to a tryout for camp, and they liked him enough that they decided to keep him around and, well, under AHL contract and send him to the Icemen. He's a 26-year-old veteran with over 300 AHL games played and 26 NHL games played. Big dude at 6'4", 223, and he was a first-round pick of the San Jose Sharks in 2006.
I'd have to dive back into my old hockey newses and look him up and see what the write-up was on him on 2006. Is this our third first-round pick that's ever played for the Icemen?
Oh, boy.
Dalton Levier, Ty Wishart, and wasn't...
Mario Larocque was.
Mario Larocque. So that's the three that I can think. So
I don't know.
Pretty
there, may
cool.
have, there may have been another one at some point, but I don't remember what round was Alan York taken in. He wasn't a first rounder,
no,
I don't think.
No.
I think he was like a third, fourth, fifth, somewhere around there. So, Wishart's another guy that's coming down, and that's six players coming from an affiliate to start the season. That's, I think, the most we've had from a single affiliate to start the season, and there's some good ones there, too. So this is good stuff that Ottawa and Binghamton is sending us to start the season. We'll see how things progress from this point forward, but we're off to a good start, I would say. A few other players worth mentioning returned to the Icemen after being in camps at higher levels. Guy Lapine is back. He was in camp with Ottawa and then later Binghamton, went on their preseason road trip to France, which I'm sure he was being used as a translator while they were over there. And he's back with the Icemen, and the aforementioned Matt Lowry was in camp with the Adirondack Flames in the AHL, and he's back with the Icemen now, too. A couple players. Oh, anything on that?
Oh, I was just happy. Sad for them, but hopefully they get another shot up there. But makes this team. Here's your number one D-man and your number one center, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. A couple players that are no longer with us. Garrett Bartus released. We'll get into why in a minute.
That was heartbreaking. Lord Bartus.
Yeah, I think there were a few fans who took it even harder than you did.
I don't know. But I took it pretty hard.
You're pretty used to taking it hard.
Wow. Shocker. That Coca-Cola's going right to you. Dylan Clark traded to Rapid City for a player to be named later.
Yeah. As Brad Perkins like to say, we'll call him Chuck.
Nice.
Player to be named later is named Chuck. I said on the Asylum that if things aren't going well at some point during a home game, we're down by 3 or 4 goals late, we should start a We Want Chuck chant.
Yes, nice.
Just to confuse the hell out of people. And some players signed to ECHL contracts. We got 4 more players from last season's team that have come back that we didn't know about until the training camp roster was released. And a few other new guys of note. The returning players are Peter Sakaris.
That's fantastic.
Mark Anthoyne.
Awesome.
Antoine Corbin.
Love it.
Another one of your man crushes.
Yeah, he's a big guy, great kid. And if he gets more experience and puts it all, he's got all the tools. Once he puts it all together, he's going to be awesome. But you remember last year he took a stick in the face, all kinds of stitches and everything else, and never stopped and just threw the cage on and just kept playing his game. So I think he's a great character guy.
And defenseman Zach Curry.
And again, captain of that Quinnipiac team with Lauren Barron, and those two together are instant chemistry. You can put them in at that third pairing and they're good to go.
Also invited to training camp, but since released, Dustin Hoffner was
good
in camp.
Good to see him back.
Yeah. If nothing else, just back on the ice after the conky, because that was not good at
it
the end of
nasty.
Last season. And former CHL Iceman blue liner Nick Schneider.
Always, boy, you want to talk about a lunch pail, hard hat wearing, go to work every day kind of guy is Nick Schneider. He was the highlight of one of our CHL seasons. And,
mm-hmm.
Fan favorite for sure, and awesome that he got a chance to come back to town and skate. I don't think, did he skate in the Ford Center before he got traded in that second year? I can't remember if he made it to the ECHL or not, but I'm glad.
No, he did not make it to the ECHL, but he played in the CHL, and I think he was in that.
And then he got traded
season.
Away, right?
Yeah,
so
something like
at least
that.
He gets to come back and skate in Swander one more time.
Yeah, and that the first CHL season, I think he was like the only plus player on a team that was 20 games below 500.
Yep.
So when he was invited to camp, I said I didn't expect him to make the team, but that's one of those guys that you get a look at him in camp, you see how he's doing right now, and if you need an emergency call-up for the third D pairing in the middle of the season, you could do a lot worse than Nick Schneider.
We could have used him last year when Larkin, Lapine, and Lavin all got called up. We could have used a Nick Schneider in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and he will be nearby. He is under contract to the Peoria Rivermen in the SPHL. So should an injury hit in the middle of the season, and with this team, I'm sure it will, if we need a fill-in guy on D and you need somebody who's close by, I think you could do a lot worse than Nick Schneider. So it was cool to see him back. It was really cool at the season ticket holder open house last week when they introduced all the players. He was still here. He hadn't been cut yet. And when they introduced Nick Schneider, he got the biggest ovation of every player there. It was really neat because a lot of the fans that have been around since the CHL days remembered him. And he got the Schneider, and he seemed slightly embarrassed by all of it, but it was pretty cool. So we may see him again at some point, who knows, but if not, at least he got a brief moment in the sun there.
We got some goalers coming in.
We do. A couple new faces. One of the reasons that Mr. Bartus was released is because...
Lord Bartus.
Lord Bartus, yes, not Mr.
No.
Sir Bartus?
Lord Bartus.
Lord Bartus. Cal Heater, H-E-E-T-E-R, a St. Louis native and Ohio State University product. I refuse to say the Ohio State University. He was undrafted but has been under NHL contract the last two seasons to the Philadelphia Flyers. Last season he played 44 games in the AHL with Adirondack, who were then the Phantoms. With a .265 goals against average and a .912 save percentage, and he played one game with the Flyers in the NHL last year. And he was actually in camp this season with your beloved Toronto Maple Leafs and your beloved Toronto Marlies, but he did not make the cut. And 3 days after the Marlies let him out of camp, he was signed with the Icemen.
Yep, I didn't even know it.
No.
Until he got signed, yep. So, but should be awesome.
Yeah, very much so. You don't post a 265 goals against a 912 save percentage in the AHL without having some talent.
Well, so yeah, but so did Alan York. So,
well, that's true. We'll see how he adjusts to the game at this level, but there's certainly talent there. Another player with some talent is goaltender Brandon Kamm, a rookie, played 4 years of D1 hockey, 3 years as the starter, and as a senior in 37 games had a 246 goals against and a 923 save percentage, both of which were second in his conference, which just so happened to be the same D1 conference that Garrett Barnes played at.
Interesting.
And Kamm had better numbers for the most part throughout his college career than Barnes. So when he was signed, I told people, don't sleep on this kid. He may outshine Barnes and earn himself a job. And now with Heater having been signed, I'm not sure that Kamm is going to stick on the roster, but still, he's here and Barnes isn't anymore. So there was some credence to what I was spouting.
Yeah, but
the words that were coming out of my mouth.
I'd be surprised if Mullins keeps three goaltenders.
No, so I don't think.
I think as long as Dreider and Heater, yeah, that forced Lord Barnes out.
Well, yes. But as long as Dreider is healthy. But the point is, if he's not, Kamm would be the guy that would be filling in and not Barnes. So, yeah, it is sad to see Barnes go, but at the same time, with the guys that we have here, that's how it works.
Yep. One final note, Alaska.
You're just skipping all sorts of ahead, aren't you?
Yeah, and the one guy I was really excited about.
Yeah, a forward by the name of one of the greatest hockey names I think I've ever heard, Dirk Southern.
Yep.
And he's Canadian. He's from Winnipeg. A veteran entering his ninth season. He's a forward. He was a seventh-round pick of the Anaheim Ducks in 2003. Played 4 years of professional hockey in North America, then went over to Europe for 3 years, and then came back to the U.S. last year. Played for the Gwinnett Gladiators with 39 points in 57 games. And his ECHL career totals are 162 points in 248 games. So not a point-per-game guy, but solid offense and a veteran presence, and when he was added to the camp roster, I thought to myself, there's a pretty darn good chance he's going to make the opening day roster.
Yep. He's a bigger body, real solid player, so he'll find a role, no problem.
And, yes, the final note elsewhere, the Alaska Aces have released Shane Heffernan, former AHA Evansville Iceman. We were wondering if he would make the cut.
Awesome agent to somehow, and not that I wasn't that surprised that he got a tryout, more than where the location was.
Yeah.
What was the connection that got him into Alaska?
The defending champions,
yes,
no less.
So, but anyways,
New Jerseys. There's two New Jerseys,
not Stoopy's New Jerseys.
Oh, okay.
Like our new jerseys.
New sweaters, new unis, yeah,
sweaters.
Gotcha. On October 3rd on Eyewitness News, the Icemen finally unveiled their new suite of jerseys for this upcoming season. As expected, the bleepin' baby blue is gone and black is back. The dark jerseys are now black with white and very dark blue trim, the Icemen logo on the front. They will be worn at home after the All-Star break and on the road before the All-Star break. The light jerseys are white with black and very dark blue trim. The logo on the front, they'll be worn at home before the All-Star break and on the road after. And the alternate third jerseys are very dark blue with white and black trim. The front has Evansville in big block letters diagonally going down from the right shoulder to the left hip. And I really like the black or the alternate thirds.
Well, yeah, that goes back to that original AHA jersey with the home white with the Evansville down it. And
yep.
I think John Legate still has one. You see a few around town here and there.
We have one.
And, oh, do you?
Yeah,
and,
Amanda has one.
It is still the classiest, best jersey,
in
my opinion.
That white jersey with the Evansville block is the jersey we were wearing when we won the championship.
Okay, yep.
So, indeed. There's some history to that, but it's a different look, but yes, definitely a nod to the classics. So, I like the black jerseys. I like the white jerseys. I really like the blue jerseys. So, I'm glad.
I really didn't like the baby blue jerseys.
I didn't either. So, and I'm just glad to be done with the stupid Penguins ripoffs.
I remember that press conference, and they unveiled the new jerseys. And out walks Brian Bisek and Phil Plant.
And
I can't remember
Todd
was.
Robinson, I think, was. Or no, Mark
no,
Cody.
Robinson wasn't in town.
I think it was
yet.
Mark Cody.
Yeah, and it was dead quiet.
Yeah.
And it, there's just nobody. And Ficarelli tried to pump up the crowd. And it's our new jerseys! New jerseys! And yeah. Everyone was just like, what?
Crickets.
And then I believe it was Soupy that posted a picture of the somebody in the old Maniacs Asylum pre-Facebook posted a picture of the Western Michigan Blizzard team that we had just beaten for the championship, and it was pretty much the same. It was pretty much the same color scheme. So I'm glad that's over.
Yeah. Well, what bugged me the most was that they tried to pass it off like it was this unique set of jerseys, and they were clearly the Penguins Winter Classic jerseys.
But so it's all over.
It is what it is. It's in the past, and we move. But it's back to the future in a way because we're just going back to black, which is what we wore in the first place.
Shockers Hockey Rocks Song of the Week.
In honor of the team's new jerseys, I'm dusting off a classic that I played a lot back at Swander when the Icemen wore black. I think it's one of the best rock songs ever made. It is from the 1980 album of the same name. It's Back in Black by AC/DC.
Black. I hit the sand. I've been too long. I'm Youth Inc. has been an outreach to inner city and area youth for over 20 years. Home of a coffee house, a vintage store, radio station, and music venue, Youth Inc. has run solely on the donations of supporters. Donation is easy, online, and secure. Visit our website, wiredwiredwired.com. Click to donate and join our Youth Inc. family of supporters.
Now, Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And we're back. Shocker. Dirty D. Wired Radio. Shockley. Who won't say the Ohio State, but he'll say rejigger.
I have standards. They're very, very low. As anyone who listened to that first segment can figure out.
Will you say the U, or do you say the Hurricanes of Miami University?
I don't really address them. I'm a Notre Dame fan. I've not liked them since childhood.
Getting excited for that game on Saturday night. But anyways, give me an A. Give me a C. I can't even read. Give me a C. Give me an A. Give me another A.
The way you said it, that smells like...
You know, the sad thing is, and no, thank God no one's in the studio with us, but it's all written down for me in bold capitals, and I still can't read.
Hashtag reading is hard. Yeah. Math's not the only thing that's hard. So, give me a C, give me an A, give me an A, is predicting who will be the opening day captains for the Icemen. We're going to kind of exclude rookies from this because rookies are very rarely captains. Last year, Jeremy Langlois was for a while. But the affiliate players that are in the mix are Jacob Sulek, Danny Hobbs, Brandon Wong, Troy Rutkowski, and Ty Wishart, who is a veteran by ECHL rule. There are three veterans under ECHL contract. They are Jarrett Lucan, Dirk Southern, and Kevin Harvey. And then the non-rookies that are under ECHL contract are Matt Lowry, Nathan Moon, Guy Lapine, Peter Sakaris, Andre Bouvet-Morissette, Kale Kerbashian, Lauren Barron, Donnie Harris, Antoine Corbin, and Zach Curry. So out of those guys, who would you pick? Not necessarily who you would pick, but who do you think will be the three captains?
Oh, I liked who do I would I
well,
pick?
Well, we can do both. would you pick?
This is going to be my guess, and this would be my pick, but I'm going to guess Guy Lapine is going to be our captain.
I am with you on that one.
And no more of these forwards being captains. It obviously hasn't worked. I think Troy Rutkowski will get an A. And,
really?
And, yep. And because of his familiarity with Coach Mullins. Yeah. And I think Matt Lowry. And the one outside chance, I wonder about Danny Hobbs, too, possibly getting one, again, because of the connection.
See, I think Lapine would be the best option for the C. I think if you're going to go with a player that is familiar with Mullins, I would lean toward Jarrett Lucan, who played for him in Allen in the CHL and won championships. Well, he won championships, not with Mullins, but that's a guy that's a veteran. He's won championships and he's familiar with Mullins. So I think he would be a good choice for an A. I would not be at all opposed to Lowry. I wouldn't be shocked if Moon ends up with an A. And I wouldn't be shocked if Hobbs or Rutkowski ends up with an A. The one thing with the affiliate players is you never know if or when they'll get called
exactly.
up. So there's always a risk to making them part of your leadership group and trying to build your leadership around them, and then one day, poof, they're gone. So, yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to having Hobbs or Rutkowski be one of the A's, but you don't know. And Mullins would probably have a better idea of that than we would.
Right.
You know, if he gets the indication from Binghamton that, yeah, barring a major travesty of injuries, these guys are probably going to be with you all year, then sure, throw an A on their jersey and go forward. But I think the important thing to remember is the C, the A, and the A mean a lot, but you don't have to have one of those letters on your jersey to be a leader. And Troy Rutkowski can be a leader and can help facilitate the link between Mullins and the players that don't know him, whether he's got a C or an A on his jersey or not. So, yeah, I'll say Lapine with a C, Lucan with an A, and I'll go Lowry as the second A.
Cool.
So we're
and Nathan Moon will probably fool us all.
And he'll get the C. Yeah. What do you think about Moon? There's been a lot of discussion on the Asylum about Moon as a potential captain. And in part because some question his, not necessarily his heart, but the fact that he doesn't always appear to be going 100%, and some question the fact that because he's a pest, that's the role he plays. I'm not saying that disparagingly. That's the role he plays. He's a pest-type player, and those sometimes are not the best when it comes to engaging the officials. Do you think that is a drawback to him being a captain, or do you not really worry about that and just passed him over for other reasons?
First of all, the people, we have to address it every year. I cannot stand when people sit in the stands or watch it on TV and question someone whether they're given 100% or not. So that's a number one frustration. And if you want to make those comments, we got room in the C League over at Swander Ice Arena. We got room in the Evansville Team League, what we like to refer to as the ETHL,
which features your Red Dragons.
Yes, the Red Dragons. Actually, it's Kevin Ziegler's Red Dragons. I'm just a cog in the wheel. But strap on the skates. Show me what 100% looks like on every shift so that I can compare you to Nathan Moon. That's the first thing I will say, because you cannot sit there and eat popcorn and hot dogs in Section 117 and decide what guys are playing 100% and what guys aren't. So,
not saying you don't have to be better than the player you're questioning.
No,
but
I just want to see 100%. Right, I want to see you, any person, right, give 100% at your ability level every shift.
Right.
I want to see that. So that's all I want to see. Then I'll compare it to a Nathan Moon. So
some of the people that complain don't even give 100% at being a fan all the time.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot less effort.
The next thing is, so I think Nathan Moon has got, obviously he loves the city. He is an Iceman player, but
really?
Iceman, like, this is third season. He had other options. He could have gone other places. He probably could have made more money going somewhere else.
He probably could still try to find work in the AHL.
Yeah.
And yet he was here all summer.
So, but I still think that number one role of that captain is to be the voice of the coach when the coach isn't around, and facilitate that interaction between this is what the coach is barking, this is what he means. And he also has to be that guy when the coach turns his back and someone starts talking crap, he's got to shut him up. He's got to say, no, we're doing what the coach says. And I don't know if Moon's got that relationship with Mullins like a Rutkowski, like a Jarrett Lucan. So that's why I think those guys will be up higher and Moon won't be a captain, just because when Mullen says something and storms out of a room, how is Nathan Moon going to interpret that, because he doesn't have a year of experience with him?
True. Yeah, and ultimately, like I said on the Asylum, what I think doesn't matter, what you think doesn't matter, ultimately the relationship with officials doesn't matter that much, because the captain's talking to the officials is only a minor part of the whole role of captain. The biggest thing is, what do you bring to that team both on the ice and in the room, and probably more so in the room than even on the ice? And if the players and the coach feel comfortable with him having a C or an A on his jersey, then that's all that matters. It doesn't matter what I think, doesn't matter what you think, doesn't matter what any fan on the Asylum thinks, whether they give 100% or not. We'll see. And sometimes you see that where teams will announce their captains for a season and one of them just shocks everybody. But it doesn't matter what the fans think. It matters what the men in that room think. And if the coach is good with it and the players are good with it and they select him, then that's all that matters.
Beaulieu was awesome last year. And one of the things that ended up on his plate, because the fans think, well, you know, he's got to be a leader, he's got to be scoring goals, he's got to talk to the officials. It has nothing to do with that. It has to deal with signing pucks for fans and media requests. And he organized, he made sure all the guys – he had to kick a couple of guys in the butt. Hey, you haven't done enough like everyone else has, because there's other guys, you know, your Peter Sakarises and your Andre Bouvet-Morissettes and others that were always out, because there's so much promotion that the Icemen do, so many different things, and he made sure it was balanced and everyone was out there, that the rookies were being taken care of, that the veterans were being taken care of, that everyone was getting along, and he managed that whole thing last year, and it was awesome. And it was awesome as a broadcaster to be able to just go to him and say, hey, I need this, or this these people are looking for this, and he'd figure out a way to make it happen. So it made everyone feel special and made more fans come out to the Ford Center.
And I think Beaulieu being the team's assistant coach now, it, in a way, it sort of lessens the importance, not to diminish it, but it lessens the importance of who you choose as the captain of the team. Because having been the captain and knowing some of the guys that are on this team, Beaulieu, while he is the assistant coach, in a lot of ways will still be sort of functioning as a captain. It's just that he's not actually out there on the ice playing. But that relationship is still going to be there, and he's going to be that conduit between Mullins and the players, just like he was last year when he was playing. It's just that he's officially an assistant coach now. So you're, in a way, you're almost going to have four captains. You're going to have Beaulieu plus the three that are wearing the letters on their sweaters. So, yeah, I think Beaulieu's hiring cannot be understated as an important part of this team going forward. You know, you look at, oh, well, it's an assistant coach, big deal. You know, what does an assistant coach really do? It's not just about helping out with paperwork and things like that. That is a big thing to have a guy that knows this team, and you want to talk about a guy who is the Iceman. Josh Beaulieu is the Iceman. Yep. And to have that link to our past and some of the players that are in the current between a new coach and a lot of new players, that's huge.
Iceman season predictions.
All right. Time to put our money where our mouth is.
Yep. I was I nailed it 2 years ago. Said they were going to be horrible, and I was right. And then last year, I put them in the top four.
Yeah.
And not so right.
Yeah. I had them in the playoffs too, but you were more wrong than I was, but we were both wrong. Yep. they went 30.
The difference with my wrong is I own up to it and don't use excuses.
The Iceman went 31-30-11 last year, missing the playoffs. So, two questions. How many games will the Iceman win this year, and where will they finish in the seven-team North Division?
I got some concerns. I love our forwards. The defense, I don't know them well enough yet, and that's where I got concerns.
Yeah, my main concern is on D as well.
You look at last year when we were a top three team in the ECHL, Larkin, Lavin, Lapine, Krug, and then you had a Lauren Barron, a Jacob Johnston. That was your third pairing. And now you've got Lapine still, and Lapine's better now than he was last year.
Right.
After that stint in the AHL with Utica, he's awesome. That's about all you got.
I'll say
well,
this.
That isn't what all you got, but we have question marks where we had solid last year.
Right.
Who replaces Joel Lavin? Who replaces Larkin? Who replaces Matt Krug? And
Are Wishart and Rutkowski those top pairing guys or not? If they are, we're probably okay. If they're not, we got issues.
Yeah. And so that's the concern. So I'm going to say, I'm going to guess 31 wins and fifth place.
Really?
Yep.
You're saying missing the playoffs.
I am. But that is the only concern, because I think this forward class is awesome. So they may be able to carry it. So I could see, I don't see any worse than fifth. I see total potential. But
what do you think is the ceiling? Do you think they can win the division?
Oh, yeah.
You think anywhere from first to fifth?
Yeah. but when I
solid pinpoint.
But no, but I'm saying fifth. But I wouldn't be surprised. I would be tons more surprised with seventh than I would be with first. Because first place is, I didn't know what I was talking about, the D, and they got it all figured out,
right.
and it all makes sense.
Seventh place is, what the hell happened?
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm going to say 36 wins, and I'll say third in the division. I'm going to be more optimistic this year than you are, which is a role reversal for the two of us. But yeah, I'll say 36 wins.
Well, it's just every other year.
Yeah, that's true. 36 wins and third place. But I'm totally in agreement with you that I could see anywhere from first to fifth maybe sixth, but I would be shocked if we finish seventh.
Well, and let's measure your third place commitment here. What do you think is more likely, first place or fifth place? What would surprise you more?
First or fifth?
Yes. That's two spots going either way of your third.
First would surprise me more.
Okay.
I think
so. It's a loose three.
It's a well, yeah.
It's a three minus.
My
it's a rejiggered three.
Right, yeah. My silence in trying to make my decision was, do I go third or fourth? So because of that, yeah, I would say first would surprise me more than fifth. But anywhere in that range would not shock me. And even honestly, sixth, a close sixth wouldn't shock me. But if, you know, one of those just fall off the face of the planet and totally out of it by, you know, Valentine's Day, I don't see that happening. Yep. Unless we end up with 500 man games lost to injury again, which, you know.
And, of course, you'll make sure to bring it up so that you can qualify exactly. Your prediction. Brian Patafi, Tweet of the Week.
Iceman fans can follow Iceman athletic trainer and director of blah, 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 Brian Patafi on Twitter. His handle is bpatafi. That's bpatafie. File this one under autocorrect misadventures. What he meant to say, in typical joking Brian Patafi fashion, was, quote, started a freaking juice diet today and screwed up my blender putting a pepperoni pizza through it. See, the joke is that his juice diet was pepperoni pizza juice.
Yeah, I get the joke.
Right. The problem is...
kind of sounds good.
What he actually said was... started a foreskin juice diet today and screwed up my blender putting a pepperoni pizza through it. So, yeah, next time anyone runs into Brian Patafi, ask him how he's enjoying his foreskin juice diet.
Upcoming games. Here we go.
Yeah, finally, after a brutally long offseason, we can do this segment again. Upcoming games is...
wasn't that brutally long.
Well, you're used to long off seasons. You're a Leafs fan.
Well, that's true, too.
It's not actually upcoming games. It's just one, but it's a good one. Saturday, the 18th, this Saturday, we can finally say that, this Saturday. At 7:15 p.m., the Iceman home opener against the Gwinnett Gladiators. The first 6,500 fans through the doors will get a magnet schedule. And I guess it remains to be seen whether or not that's in the old schedule or the new schedule.
Poor Brian Ball.
I don't know if they've got the new ones printed up or not. We'll see. If it's the old schedule, remember, you can go to IcemanManiacs.com and print off the new one for free.
There you go. Tape it to it. Yeah. Hockey tape to it.
Yeah, hockey tape. There you go. There will be a party on Main Street starting at 2 o'clock. Backstage is doing a big thing. They're going to have... like they did last year, they're going to have food and drink specials and a cornhole tournament and activities for the kids and all sorts of good stuff. The Booster Club will be out there. We'll be selling cowbells and whatnot. And it's just going to be a good time. I'm sure some people will probably be tailgating out in the back 40 lot at the same time. And hopefully the weather will cooperate and it'll just be, you know, go downtown at 2 o'clock and don't leave until 10 and celebrate an Iceman victory afterward.
So you won't say the Ohio State, but you'll say cornhole.
I got no problem with that. I'm Indiana boy. We say cornhole around these parts.
I'm from an older generation.
You find a small enough cornhole and you rejigger it until it fits.
Exactly. That's what it meant back in my high school days. The dangling tangent.
All right. We're finishing the show with a quick off-topic topic. And this is a not-so-thinly-veiled nudge for you to promote your show.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. I am.
You should come on tomorrow because I don't have John, or tonight because I don't have John Greenwell.
I am currently 5-1 in both of my fantasy football leagues. How are you doing in fantasy football this season, sir?
My wife is going to laugh her butt off. I am 2-4.
Really?
Yep. We, two games that we scored, one game we scored 100 points, one game we scored 95, and we don't have your spasmatic scoring system. We actually use the official scoring system.
The default.
And we lost by 2 points each week. And then, of course, this past week, we dialed up the 66-point just crap game that everyone has once a year. So we were top three in points, sitting at 1-3, and now we're at 2-4. So I have done well. We do a top five pick every show, our top five of the week. and I've done really well picking guys. What happens, though, is it's really easy to find matchups, or maybe it isn't really easy, but I've done really well finding matchups and players and saying, play this guy, play this guy. But I've struggled when you're in a 10-team league and you're trying to get those guys, who right. do I drop and everything else? Because I mentioned Malcolm Floyd last week on the show, San Diego versus Oakland. He's going to go off, and I'm looking at my roster. Do I drop a guy? Because I got bye weeks too, so do I drop a guy to put Malcolm Floyd on my team to sit Reggie Wayne against Houston? And I couldn't do it. So, and Reggie Wayne gets me 3.5 points. Malcolm Floyd goes off for 17. But Waiver Wednesday is a ton of fun. A lot of fan interaction. You know, you just scream out from Beef O'Brady's, or you can listen in. You can call us live on the phone, too. So 6 to 7 Beef O'Brady's every Wednesday evening.
Why isn't Greenwell showing up this week?
He is in Jamaica.
No kidding?
Yeah, it's good to be the boss.
Yeah, wow. So are you just flying solo?
Yep. I've got a couple of calls, and I'm trying to snag a couple of guys. I'm trying to get Mike Scavea from ESPN. Hmm. Come on over. He's a huge Bears fan. And I am also trying to get Evansville Otter and University of Aces women's basketball, women's soccer.
What word was that?
University of Evansville Aces. Mike Radomski to join as well. So got some invites out. We'll see if they show up, and we'll go from there.
Cool. So you're just in one league?
Yes.
And you said we. Are you and Rebecca like co-managing the team?
No. I actually co-managed the team with my high school or college roommate from 1988. We've always done it together.
Really?
So, but Rebecca was teasing me the other day saying, you better not let anyone find out what your fantasy record is. So no one's going to listen to your radio
you're
show.
You're doling out advice and you're below 500.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is.
You know, it's always easy to do that, though. And fantasy is, in any sport, not just fantasy football, it's so weird because it almost always seems like when you're on the fence about a decision, whatever you decide ends up being wrong.
Yeah. In fact, I had such a horrible time with tight ends this year, putting in the wrong tight end and not getting any points. Like the one game that Antonio Gates went off for the 26 points, I sat him. And then I put him in for the next 2 weeks, and he got us 4 points total.
Yeah.
So I cut him. And then he's scored
and then
touchdowns.
He goes off.
Yeah. And so finally I told my buddy, my roommate, old college roommate, I said, you're tight ends coach. Congratulations. You got a promotion. So I had gone out and picked up Jordan Cameron from the
I like Jamron.
Yeah,
that's
Jamron.
Good.
Because you know there's Jordan Cameron and there's also Cameron Jordan. He's a defensive end for the Saints. One of those freaky things name-wise. But so I picked him up from Cleveland because he was healthy, and we had Larry O'Donnell from the Giants. And so my buddy put in Larry Donnell, and he didn't 1.2 points, and of course the Cameron Jordan goes off for 16. So yeah. It's just been one of those seasons.
That's how it is. And you know, you talked about that 66-point week.
Yep.
That's the kind of game that I don't mind losing.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You know, it's,
yeah.
If you lose 110-60, it's, oh, well. You know, I got blown out. It was one of those weeks. What's infuriating is when you lose 198.
Yep.
And you look at your bench
and
you go,
done it twice.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, if I had played X instead of Y, I would have won. And there, sometimes you'll see three or four different ways. It's like you made every single possible wrong decision that gave you that loss. And when you lose by 50, you know, and you lost by 50,
yeah,
it's like when you lose a hockey game 7-1. You know, sometimes it's just not your night.
Final thoughts, and there's one not on our sheet that I want to throw to you, but Matt Shepke put out a nice little Facebook goodbye to everybody. Sounds like he's finally going to wrap it up.
Is
and
he?
Officially call it a career. So great guy. Leading scorer for Iceman, goal scorer in the history of the Iceman now, until that one gets broken this year by Andre Bouvet-Morissette. But what a great guy, and final thoughts on Matt Shepke.
Well, then I guess I'll use this as a cheap plug for myself. If you want my final thoughts on Matt Shepke, go to IcemanManiacs.com, and toward the end of last season, after his final game at the Ford Center, I wrote a really long-form feature story about him and his last game, and probably got more positive feedback about that story that I've gotten about probably anything I've ever written. Either that or the story about Craig McDonald when he suited up as the emergency backup goaltender for the Iceman. Those two stories are probably my two favorite stories that I've written for the site. So, yeah, go to IcemanManiacs.com, go to the info and features page, and there's a link to the Shepke story there. I believe it was last March when it was posted. So, yeah, great guy. And that's a cliche almost among Iceman fans, because some fans overuse the term, you know, everybody's a great guy. But Matt Shepke really is a great guy. And all the stuff that he did off the ice for kids and working with youth hockey players and things like that, they don't come better than Matt Shepke. And if he is indeed hanging them up for good, then it's pretty cool that he finished his career with the Icemen, because it was a great way to go out. The last game he had here was very memorable.
Preeminent professional. Anything I asked him, he always did, whether it was coming on the Iceman Live show or whatever else. But what was amazing was going back to Wheeling, going back to Greenville, and broadcasters, coaches, GMs tracking me down. Can I talk to Matt? Can I talk to Shepke? Can you hook him up with me? It was fans coming out wearing Shepke jerseys, 4, 5, 6 years old in the stands from Greenville and from Wheeling. And it just... And he was there for him. He got off the bus, talked to all the fans, and then went and did his workout routine.
It's
awesome.
It's real easy to ask fans of a player's current team what they think of him, because generally, you know, the word coming out of the locker room and the word among most fans, with some exceptions, is generally going to be positive. The real truth comes out after a player is gone. And if a player is gone a few years and everyone still speaks very highly of them, that tells you really what they're about. And, yeah, exactly. If you go to a place and he hasn't been there in 5 years and people are still asking about him, wanting to talk about him, that tells you a lot about the kind of guy Matt Shepke is.
That'll wrap us up for our second episode of the third season, Iceman Insights. He is Michael Shockley. He is the senior writer, webmaster, vice president of Offbeat Shenanigans, and the engineer... Dang it. I was going with a funny joke there, but I could. Oh, the engineer rejiggerer of Wired Radio. And we'll be back next week.
I don't even know what that means.
Exactly. Make them hit them right in the mind.
Somebody's going to Google it. Maybe I'll add that to my titles on IcemanManiacs.com.
There you go.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.